What, you got an itch? I'd love to scratch it.
Rush, rush.
How did he do such fantastic stunts with such little feet?
If you got an itch, now it's scratch.
Rush, rush.
16B.
Out! Take off, you hoser!
Get up! Oh! Oh,
take off!
Nothing is worse than having an itch you can never scratch.
Rush, rush.
Rush Rash, a weekly listen through the Rush catalog of studio tracks, one cut at a time, with your co-hosts, Chaz and Chats. Go on, say it, Rush Rash with Chaz and Chats, Rush Rash with Chaz and Chats. Hot damn,
Now go do that voodoo that you do. Go away!
Rush Rash.
Oh, Chats! What's up, dude?
What's happening, man?
Listen to that, man. We got another case in there. Holy shit.
Just week after week.
Oh, my God. Fresh off the heels of having KJA, Kevin J. Anderson here. Holy shit.
Yeah,
what an experience. We had to wait 2 weeks to drop our next episode. There was such an
impact. I know. I'm still recovering.
Holy fuck. I'm still like, wow. Oh, my God. Wow, and that was like a high point. What a high point. And hey, we are continuing a theme like we usually do around here. We'll get on a kick and we start going, we can't stop. Now we got another author here tonight. That's why the fucking sirens are going nuts. We got another guy who likes to write books this thing we call Rush.
Next in the author series on Rush Rash.
You got it. That's it. It's going to have to become a regular annual thing, you know, as I've actually learned and trying to learn a little bit about our guest, that there are quite a few books out there, a lot of people that we could invite in here. But holy shit, let's talk about who we've got in there right now, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, special setup for today. This guy is so immersed in the world of Rush, right? He's literally become a part of the lyrical experiment gone wild, right? So he's put all this shit in writing. Len Roberto, man who penned this book, it's called The Simple Kind Mirror, The Lyrical Vision of Rush. Can't wait to get into this shit, and I got to tell you why, right? It goes back to, it's more than just a little bit of, you know, connect the dots and our little connection that we got going on with Greg Wolfie Wolf over there at the Regarding series, right? So he hooked us up with Joe Cruz, right?
Exactly.
That was a wonderful show. It's the big numbers out there. People are sharing the shit out of that because I think they're getting the link to that awesome freaking clip of his out on YouTube doing that that tribute to Neil and to Rush. But listen, man, so awesome. Len is connected to Joe through Bill Levine. So we heard that name a couple times, right? So we got this connection going on there with Wolfie Wolf. So Len, I know Len as another form from way back, right? So turns out
And
my wife used to be co-workers when you and I was, residents of North Jersey there in Hackensack.
Yeah, it's a small world.
It is a freaking small world. So, but here's the deal, right? We never talked about Rush back then. I didn't know he's a fucking nut like this until well after I'm married and my wife starts talking. We saw that movie, Dude, I Love You. And she's like, oh, I knew a guy like that. It was Rush. Oh, yeah, I love you, man. That's it. Let's get him. These fucking sirens are driving me nuts. Let's get him out of here. Everybody, say hello. Welcome, Len Roberto, everyone.
Woo!
Len.
Hey, Len.
How you doing? Right.
How are you, man?
I don't know. Following Kevin Anderson is going to be tough. I mean, holy man.
You are doing it, sir. You have.
I read some of his books. That's awesome.
You are. Well, you are in the footsteps, my friend. Wow. You are here at the seat because we are all a part of this big fucking community that, hey, when I knew you another life ago, we didn't even fucking talk about it. Didn't know it. But you were bleeding Rush fan, right? God, those sirens are going nuts. So you
didn't have the book
itch.
Yet. Didn't write my book yet, but
It was right before that, right?
So we knew each other.
Right. So late 90s, we got to know each other a little bit, just a little, hung out a couple times. According to Roger Waters, we would be famous friends by this point. But anyway, long story short, we knew each other a little bit. And so a couple years later, you write this book, right? It comes out in the early 2000s. Tell us about this book you've written, The Simple Kind Mirror, The Lyrical Vision of Rush, because it's got a great write-up and great reviews out there on Amazon. So, Len, in your own words, please, tell us, because you are here in Kevin's footsteps.
Well, remember, you know, at this time, this was 99, right? Mm-hmm. I was convinced that the band was done. I just figured, It's over, right? I mean, the tragedies with Neo, I just didn't see how they were going to come back. And I'm like, man, I'm an English major. I was always thinking about this stuff in the lyrics. Every song that I hear, I always, if I can understand the damn lyrics, I like to think about it. What are they trying to say? What are they referencing? And of course, he had thousands. So I'm like, I want to try to write something. I've always wanted to write something. So,
no shit. So you were inspired to write by Neil. That's amazing. All right.
Yeah, I was an English major. I did a lot of
writing.
Well,
that's how you and my wife must have connected, right? Because she was the English major too. That must have been part of your friendship back then. Yeah.
And I said, all right, I'm going to just sit down. I'm going to try to write something. And what am I going to do? I'm like, well, I always, you know, like you guys, there's periods of the band, right? There's the 70s, the 80s. They're very, very defined. And I'm like, I don't want to write about the 70s. I don't want to write about fucking space stuff and Cygnus and Rivendell. You know, I know all that. That's pretty obvious that they were just... But in the 80s, I was like, okay, starting with Permanent Waves, it seemed to be they were writing about social things and human things and stuff that he was experiencing. And I'm like, well, there was a lot of stuff in there that I think I just wanted to write about. I wanted to look at each song. Maybe I'll do it that way. I'll write about each song, write a little something. What did I think about it? I'm not trying to tell anybody... Here's what Neil was thinking. No, it's not that. It's like, it's open to anybody's interpretation. I'm like, let me just look at it and say, what do I think of when I hear this? What does it make me?
We like that. That's music to our ears. That's how we approach it.
Yeah, what does it make me think of? What references can I hear and see in the songs and try to write about it? And let me just go from there. It was a challenge to myself. I knew I wasn't going to find a publisher. I'm not going to Random House and going to find someone to print. I'm like, it's probably going to be a vanity thing. That's what it was. Print on demand was just coming out. I'm like, let me see if I can just get it done, not spend a ton of money on my own, because I knew I had to put money out to it. And let me see if I can do it. So I did. Took about 4 or 5 months. I don't remember what I paid for it, but the original one was just, it had nothing. It was just, you can't see it because of my thing. But the original, I didn't want to make money. I just wanted to price it at like, you know, $3, $2 or $3.
Okay.
Someone wanted to buy it. Great.
Sure.
So I did it. Here's another interesting thing. You guys know that Peggy Ciccone passed away last week, right?
Yes. Thank you for bringing that up. Yeah. R.I.P.
So after I'm done with the book and it's just about ready to be, you know, to go out there, I said, I want to send this to them. I doubt that they're going to read it. I just couldn't hope against hope for that. They're probably not going to reply. But out of courtesy, since I was quoting things in the lyrics, I didn't use any images because that would have cost more money. So I was like, let me send this to the, let me find an address. I found the Anthem address, the public relations. I sent it to her. I wrote a note. I said, Peggy, I said, I just wanted you to know I did this. I don't think I'm violating any copyrights or anything, but here it is. If something's wrong, let me know. If you want to pass it on to the band, that would be great. Thank you. And she replied. She replied to me with email, and she said, thank you for letting us know. I don't remember if she said she was going to pass it on, but she said, I'm glad you did this because you're quoting lyrics. And if basically she said, if you didn't let me know, she could have sued me for violating copyright. I don't know why.
Okay.
But she said, basically, since you did, thank you. And she was basically giving me the blessing. It's okay.
It's fucking great.
Had that. I don't have the email anymore. I wish I did. But I was like, okay, cool. Of course, I never heard from the band.
Right.
So anyway, one more thing about it. I wrote it. It's print on demand. It's $3. I'm like, okay, that's fair. I don't want anybody to pay a lot of money for it. It's 21,000 words. It's a short thing. So I'm like, okay, now what am I going to do now? I'm like, I gotta sell some of them, right? So the one you're seeing on the screen now, that's part two. Part one didn't have any images or anything. It was just boring and as ugly as you can think. So what happens was I'm like, I got to market this book myself. I'm like, it's not going to be on Amazon. It's not going to be whatever. So I went out to all the sites, 2112, Windows 2112, you know, all the Rush websites that I knew of. Mm-hmm. I contacted the webmaster and I sent them a Word file and just said, hey, I wrote this. Here's the digital file. You can read it. If you think it's all right and not a piece of crap, you can post it. I would appreciate it if you posted it on your site. And here's the link to go buy it. And so I did that. And once I got to, I sold 500. And once I got to 500, they were like, they contacted me right away and they said, oh, you're a, you're in this next level, and we're gonna redo the cover, and we're gonna you know, give you an editor, and the editor's gonna look through it, and I'm like, oh okay, wow, great, whatever.
Wow.
We're gonna put it on Amazon. We're gonna do all this stuff. So that image of that wall was from another website. I forgot that it was part of something that he did. I forgot the site.
It looks like something our sponsor over at Danforth and Pape would do.
Yeah, it's
definitely.
It's the cover.
Like a gallery.
Was it the cover of one of the compilations? I forgot. But anyway, I emailed the guy and I said, I love this. I love the image. I said, I would love to put this on the cover of my book. Would you give me permission? And I sent him a copy and he was like, yeah, sure. Just give me a quote and or say that it was mine on the back. I'm like, oh yeah, yeah. So, and I wanted it to look like the red and the black. I wanted it to look like moving pictures.
Moving pictures,
anyway,
of course.
They gave me this editor, and he goes through the whole thing. And, of course, that guy was a Rush fan, so that was nice because he knew,
knew
what I was talking
about.
That's cool. So he went through, made some changes, made some adjustments, and so that's the one you're looking at now. That's the second one. So that went on, and I think the last time I got I still get a royalty, little $2 every half a year or something.
Nice.
But, I think I sold about 2,500 so far is the total.
That's excellent, man.
That's pretty good.
But here's the weird thing, though. This is blowing. I don't know why this is happening, but I get a call every week from some company that's clearly not American company, and they can barely say my name. They can barely read the cover of the book, but they say, you know, it's like they want to buy the rights to it or something. We want to send you on an author tour. I'm like, it's 25 years old. No one's going to come and watch this crap. I'm like,
wow.
And I've heard from other people that there are companies, I don't know where they are, but they do the same thing. They're trying to buy the rights. I don't know.
You're going
to
end up in Guyana missing some fucking organs, Len. Don't do it. And you can own timeshares in fucking Thailand. Yeah, it's
going
to be all kinds of shit. No, that doesn't sound legit, man. No.
Exactly. So I just don't answer it anymore. So anyway.
Right? And it's tied to this fucking guy, this Nigerian dude that's got a sack full of cash, right? Yeah. Millions. It's a place to put it.
Yeah, some... Wow. Nigerian diplomat, right? With lots of money.
Yeah, well, that's excellent. I mean, the business of like self-publishing into getting into a deal here, right? And getting as far as you did by having this kind of collaboration. This is like we were saying at the beginning, man. This is the community. When we get connected to each other, holy shit, things happen, right? So it's amazing. I hope you sell a few more units after being on the Rash here tonight.
I'm sure you will.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, tell us, Len, because obviously that as you were talking about your rationale for approaching your editorial subject, you're coming from the place of being a well-informed fucking fan. So if our fans can't see it, but your shirt, you got that. You got the cool shirt. You're winning, you know, shirt of the day here. So the Lee Life's and Peart shirt, he's got it. So I understand that's a conversation starter, huh? When you're out and about.
Yeah, I was walking to, I think it was last year, I went to see Pain of Salvation. I don't know if you know that band. They're a Swedish progressive metal band in New York City. And like three guys on the street were walking by me and they were like, hey, that's a cool shirt. Where'd you get it? Oh, I don't remember. I don't remember, but it's cool. Yeah, I've never seen anybody else with it.
Right. Well,
I've got a whole shelf full of Rush shirts, obviously.
That's what I was going to say. Oh, that's cool. Part of the experience. I don't remember where I got it. So we got a question that we usually start off on when we start pouring into your case, your Rash around here. What was the gateway? What was the song that you said, yep, this is my band? And when did that happen? Tell us about the beginning entry and your love affair with Rush.
It was
in the foreword of your book.
Yeah, it was probably 16 years old, which would have been 1986, and I knew my buddy was a fan, but I really wasn't. I didn't really know them. I was more in the hair metal kind of thing and classic rock. But classic rock, I didn't know that Rush was in classic rock because they were still there. Anyway.
No, but hold on, though. But you had a perception that they were, right? Because it's kind of like they were elevated even back then. I'm the same kind of fan you were. I was a hair metal guy, and Rush was like already up there with the Beatles and the fucking Stones. Like, Rush. They're like up there with the Who and like bands like that, right?
And I was trying to think of this today when we were getting ready for the show. I'm like, okay, when you were 12, 13, 14, 82, 83, 84, right, you know, I knew that there were, I was in a small group, and the guys, some guys would mention Rush, right, and you'd always hear them talk like, oh, you know, best drummer in the world, right? You know, really cool. The voice is crazy, though. So they were always talked about, and it kind of turned me off. Like, it kind of turned me off. Like, well, that doesn't sound like something I would really like. But anyway, fast forward. So this was in the tape trading days, too. So like 84, 85.
Yeah, yeah.
My friends in high school, I was a freshman, sophomore. Somebody gave me a tape. I remember one was Metallica, Kill 'Em All. That was mind-blowing. But then
hell yes.
My other buddy gave me a tape, and there was Rush on it. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting. And then I heard Tom Sawyer, right? And that was it. So that was the one that was like, you know, it's like, bam. Like, what the hell? Why didn't I know about this? What the hell is going on here? And I'm like, and then, of course, you got to go backwards. Like, I got to go back and immediately had to investigate everything going backwards, and it was different. You know, I'm like, oh, okay, this is not like what they were in the 70s, but I still dug it, but it was kind of like distant. It took me a while to get into the 70s, but as I was growing on, it was like, yeah, Tom Sawyer was definitely it. And to this day, I still think Moving Pictures is, you know, if you had to pin me down and say you can go to the island with one Rush album, I think it would still probably have to be Moving Pictures.
Yep.
Just because it's just not a, they're not a weak spot on it. And it just sounds so strong. I don't know anything about recording technology, but it sounds like so, you know, it just bites through. Everything is so clear and crisp and clean. But anyway, so that was it. And then going forward, it was, of course, you know, I had to be there. I still remember Presto. I was in college at this point, 1990. That was my first show.
Okay.
1990. And a little tiny record store up at UConn Stores, tiny little place. I bugged the hell out of the guy. I'm like, when is this album coming? Presto is coming out. Oh, it's going to be here on Tuesday morning. That's when they used to deliver CDs, if you remember.
Yes.
Tuesday morning, this date, store opens at whatever. I skipped class.
I was there.
I still remember him cutting open the box and giving me my copy of Presto, which I still have that CD originally. So
hell yeah.
And then, nice.
And that was also my first tour. So I was a sophomore. My dork roommate bought like, he bought like six tickets for this Rush concert, and he couldn't sell like two of them. So I ended up getting one uncut. So you can see I have an uncut.
Oh, nice.
You can't see it, but it's an uncut
Rush
ticket.
Now,
we can
see your, oh, cool.
Yeah.
I saved all my Rush tickets. So yeah, that was my first show. And then after that,
that is awesome.
Been to every one after that, and a couple of firsts too. So I was at the first Tesoreco show in Albany, New York. 96, drove through a freaking monsoon, almost died on the way home.
No
Drove to the Knickerbocker Arena in the pouring rain for the first show of that. And then probably I don't know what your guys' best Rush show ever was, but mine was definitely the first one back after the tragedies, which was what, 02? The first show in Hartford, right? That was,
oh yeah.
That was incredible because you didn't know what they were going to play. Every other Rush show after that, you know, the internet, you knew the set list. You knew exactly what they were going to play. No mystery. But that first show was not only because it was their first show back after this, you know, I thought they were never going to play again. Here they are in my state. And they're smiling. Wow. And it was just, did you guys go to that show?
I did not go to that show. No. Oh,
it was incredible.
But
they were, you could see the smiles on their face, you know, and they were playing. And then, you know, didn't know what was coming next. What song is going to be next? That was the coolest part of it, right? No idea what was coming. You know, the acoustic version of Resist, that was like, holy crap, that was amazing. You know, so, yeah. And then I went to every show after that.
Every show after that. All right.
At least once. Yeah.
We need a total. Mm. So, shit, I can't do that math off the top of my head.
I think it's 14. I think 14, 15
okay.
shows.
Okay.
I saw three on the Tesoreco tour.
Damn.
And then once every tour after that.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Oh,
so where
great.
Was the last show? Where? Which one? R40, where did you see them?
R40 was 2015, right? I think I missed
yes.
that one.
Yes.
Yep.
I think my last show was actually 2012 on the Clockwork Angels tour.
Oh, Clockwork Angels.
And that was right in Bridgeport in my hometown.
Okay.
New arena there. So it was like, hey, I don't even have to drive very far. Crap, I only got to go like 10 miles.
Yeah, we've met a few people that were at that show. Yes, yes,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, that was a good one. My daughter was there. I dragged my daughter
along.
She was 10. When you get older, you're going to remember this, and you're going to say, I went to a Rush show in 2012. You're going to remember that.
Even though
she fell asleep by the end, but you know.
Ah, damn. She fell asleep. Oh my God.
I think so. Yeah.
Wow. But
she'll remember it.
She might have been overwhelmed by the what an experience. Just knocked her out. That's all it was. She wasn't really asleep. All right. So then, my gosh, with all these shows that you've been to, what one, like if you could stand time still and go back to one of them and relive it, what one would it be? Because now it's been a long time since you've seen them.
Yeah. That's the weird part.
That was
part,
an
right?
annual thing for you for a long time.
12 yeah, years that, ago.
That's a weird thing, right? You know, this band that we love so much is no more, right? You can only look back, and that's why I love looking at these videos that people post, you know.
Yeah. From,
imagine going back to the 70s. You guys have seen some of the videos of them in 76 and 77, how powerful they were. I mean,
oh yeah.
It's crazy so how much energy they had. Three guys and how good they were. I mean, across the board. But I don't know. Going back to the first one would be cool. The first time I saw them was obviously like, oh my God, this is my band and my first Rush concert, the Presto, you know, with the freaking bunnies. And I think Mr. Big was the opening act. That was back when they had opening acts.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. But I would have to say, yeah, that first one in Hartford, 2002, after being away for five years before they played their last show, that was it. I was with a bunch of friends and
the emotion,
like,
right?
Oh my God, they're back. I mean, they're actually back. Even though Vapor Trails, kind of a lot of stuff on there that's just like, couldn't get into the sound of that. It sounded so loud. Do you guys have that? They redid it, but it was so bombastically loud. I'm like, there was good songs on there, but to be there and there'd be that show and not know what was coming and just be so happy that they were still there and they're going to hopefully last another.
Had Vapor Trails been released? Were they touring in support of that album?
Correct. Yeah.
At that time?
That was the first. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Wow. To be at first show. I heard Geddy talk about that show. Somewhere. They were so nervous about how Neil was going to react, and he kept looking back
smiling,
to make sure
he was just
smiling. And
it was definitely one of the most special things. Yeah, that would be the one. I mean, they were all good. There was never a bad one, right? I can't look back and say that they were bad on one night. The later ones, when it was no opening act, they were all good. But I saw them every tour, the Bones tour.
Well, I was going to say, at what point did they stop using opening acts? Because it couldn't have been too long after that, right?
Yeah, I think it was Test for Echo an evening with? I'd have to look back. You guys have that book, that gigantic book that has every show they've ever...
No, we've heard about it several times here
now. Oh, my gosh.
No, I think, what's his name? Steve Brun has it.
Yeah,
someone else had it.
The book weighs like 45 pounds.
So right,
It's exercise to actually look at it. But it's got every show... It's got set lists. It's got dates where they were. I didn't realize that they played in Connecticut in 74, in New Haven. I was like, wow, that's just stuff you didn't know. But
probably some small little theater, right? Like some kind of hole in the wall, right?
Yeah, exactly. But it's got, look back in the 70s, man, they're playing 200 shows a year. I mean, it's
crazy. They were nonstop.
Yeah, and if I remember, they didn't make any money until Permanent Waves tour, right? They didn't actually, the tours were all money losers, but that's the way that they promoted themselves, right? You had to. They weren't getting tons of local radio play, but.
No, well, we've all seen those pictures of what they look like in life on the road and in those friggin' cars and vans and the poster buses. You've got in your background there. Yeah, that was the era, man, where they're looking and, they got these big setups. It's a major rock show and they're sleeping in friggin' vans, town to town, eating hand to hand, Like, my God, right?
But here's another topic I think that's cool. I don't know if you guys mind, but.
Go ahead.
So now, I'm really happy, maybe you guys disagree, that they're not thinking about touring again, right? I don't know how you guys
I think
feel
Schatz
about
is in that camp. Schatz is there.
I'd like to see them do something, but not necessarily Rush.
Correct. There was rumors, and I was reading the rumors, and I was like,
oh, there's rumors every day. It's driving me crazy.
And I don't know whether it probably wasn't them, but I was like, I don't think this, I don't want to tarnish what they had, right? Number one, right, you can't call yourself the band without Neil. So that's, even though he's still the new guy, you can't call himself.
Right, exactly.
So, but even to think about them going out with one of my friends said, well, wouldn't it be cool if they had like some of the tribute bands drummers, like have a different drummer? I mean, like, that's kind of cool. I've seen a couple of Rush tribute bands that were very, very good. But then I'm like, they haven't played in 7 years. Alex has arthritis.
Right.
I'm like, if they did it, it would be, I think it would be purely for money, and that would really tarnish it for me. And I don't know about you guys, but I've seen some bands in the last 5 years that they're not as good as they were. And, you know,
right.
It's like, why are they doing this? I'm kind of glad they did. Like you say, a one-off thing, an anniversary show, that would be cool. Have some guest drummers. Very cool. But to go out and do it as a tour, I'm glad.
No.
I just didn't want to see that go down, because there's other parts of this. No. There's other parts that make me wonder, like, now, could you imagine 20, 30 years ago being able to go and buy a Rush freaking dog collar, or the stuff they sell on some of that Rush backstage club? It's like, oh my God, there's like, that's just not what I remember. It was always like, always about the music.
Gene Simmons was such a huge part of the founding of the band. Eventually, the merchandising
got
to catch up.
Yeah.
So it took a long time.
Yeah, Rush bobbleheads.
Now they got everything, right? Yeah, exactly. Rush coffins, the bobbleheads, Rush caskets, you got it. Yeah, they're going to have everything, right?
Lunch boxes.
So anyway, I'm kind of glad that they're not. And I don't think that, I think Alex has said it. Like, he says, I can't do this. Like, my arthritis is getting worse.
Yep.
You know, I can do a couple nights, but I can't do 30 shows.
Like, so you said, like a tribute show or some kind of like an,
that would be awesome.
An evening with, where it's just reminiscing
charity,
a couple of new numbers.
Benefit.
Or,
exactly.
Or just revisiting a couple numbers, like Paige Plant, just sit down, the two of them.
Yeah,
and just mess around back and forth on a stage. Yeah, it's like that. Like, you know, I mean, honestly, it's what freaking Roger Waters should have done with his Redux of the Dark Side of the Moon, rather than release a whole friggin' album, redoing the whole friggin' thing, which is a disaster, by the way. Friggin' disaster. Me and your buddy Greg Wolf, or the guy you will see tomorrow, Greg Wolf. I don't know that you guys are buddies, but you will connect. He and I listen to that. And that's what Roger should have done. He should have done what Getty did. Like, for the My Effin' Life tour, which I thought was brilliant, right? Come into the city, have this great, nice, you know, sit down, have a talk, you know, go through some memories, read some pages, and you're done, right? Real nice.
Yeah.
And you can repeat that a couple of times and make it a special event every time like he did, and then be done with it. And it was like, okay, this really tasteful event, not this disgrace or this, you know, my God, it's blasphemy. What he did to Dark Side of the Moon is blasphemy. And that's like what, like you said, some of these bands are doing to their legacies. Like, you know, I don't want to say nothing about some of my favorite bands, but there are some I don't choose. I won't go, because to me, it's still Memphis, Tennessee, 1983. That's always going to be that band. And I don't want anything today to place the image of that band, because to me, that's what heavy metal is. So I'm not going to name who that is. They're still out on the road after 50 fucking years. But, you know, I just won't go do it. I won't go see him. But anyway.
I think that's what Neil realized at the end of the,
he did.
Of the tour, right?
Right?
He was in brutal pain. I mean,
we have heard this.
A 60-year-old guy can't play that music. I mean, look back at him from 76 and how fast and energetic and powerful he was. I'm
well, this guy was riding
end,
but... his bicycle 400 miles between cities.
Yeah.
You know, and sleeping on fucking futons in between.
Yeah,
and... That's that guy in that picture, right?
Yeah,
seriously.
But how,
right,
but how athletic.
You.
How athletic
exactly.
It was to play
that
this music
nuts.
For all,
well,
three of them.
Be. He had to be. Exactly. You know what?
So I think he realized at the end, you know, I can't do this anymore, and I want to go out of the top. And then here's the other thing. I think about this all the time, but I think, I don't know, he felt like he was, you know, I don't think you can feel like you're getting cancer, but I think he might have felt something's wrong, you know, because it happened so quickly after that last show that he didn't have very many months of peace before he found out that he was sick, right?
15, 20, he'd had about 3 years.
Where he wasn't sick?
Yeah, 2 or 3 years, and then I think he was diagnosed. But he could have been feeling something. Certainly, he was feeling his his mortality.
He was feeling his age for sure. Holy shit. They talked about that. Like, right. You had yeah. it was an athlete. Yeah. He played athletically. And yes, he's like, right. you know, this 67-year-old man trying yeah. to play the parts of a man, you know, the world's yeah. greatest drummer who was in his 20s, 30s, 40s, yeah. you know, et cetera, when he was peaking. Right.
That's so, why yeah, I think, go back and listen to The Garden. I'm like, that song just takes on so much different meaning now when you think about it. It's
kidding.
Like, there's many times when I think that is yes. the best song. I think that sometimes I think that's one of the best songs they've ever did. And it's just such an ending to the band. It's like, you cannot top that. The message of the song, I think Neil was like speaking that to, it's like, and it's just got all the elements of a great Rush song anyway. I mean, it's just fantastic.
But it does. Jesus. What How a long song has it been? To we... go out on.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Good Lord. And I'll tell you what, Len, with what you just said, I can't add anything to it. You and I haven't spoken in, what, 20-something years, maybe even longer, but you just spoke my exact. We've all had that, I believe, all of us who really, like you said, you can't help but listen to that song and go where you have to go with it, right? And just yeah. the realizations that were there. And it was just, yeah, I think I totally agree with everything you said. You know, and then we've talked to people now that know him, and he was pretty much telling everybody at the end of that tour, yeah, this is pretty much it. You know, he was setting up for it with the record and with the tour, and it was all really pretty well laid out, sounds like, in terms of his messaging, right? And then what was pretty cool, though, is that he did go on and release some things, you know, that he wrote, you know, and so he was busy right after the band broke up. So, I mean, you know, he had a little bit of time in there. I don't know exactly how much time he had, but to your point, right, that's so fucking heart-crushing and heartbreaking to think, after all the trials and tribulations and all the shit that he went through, the tragedy with his first family, to then to get to this place where he's, you know, ridden the ride of being the best drummer in the world for how long, and then realizing he can't do it anymore and having to give that up, so having to mourn that loss, and then move on into some other space where he's really starting to flourish and do really well as an author, and then even at the very end, right? That's kind of snatched from him, too. Yeah. Right, yeah.
I've read all of his books. I've collected all of his books back to the first The Masked Rider way back, and his writing was just as
you
good
have
as
a
you
copy of The Masked Rider.
Yeah, I had it. I think I still have it at home. I've got all of his stuff. And he apparently wrote some that were not ever published, that he would just print
like
20 or 30 of them and give them to friends. But yeah, his writing was just as you'd imagine. It's just, he had a way of painting a picture, and his humor and all that stuff, the motorcycle book. And they were all just, even the painful one, you know, Ghost Rider was so hard to read. But that was, I read all that stuff. I just felt like I have to know what he's talking about. I just got to. I'm never going to know him, but you can know him through that.
Well,
that's,
shit,
that's the
it's
way
fucking
he wanted it, right?
His approach was kitchen table, man. It was like, you know, it was sitting in the car, you know, riding down the road talking to somebody. I mean, it was very conversational. Yeah, his books are such an easy read. It's just like, holy shit, Neil Peart's talking to me, right? Well, and Schatz just went through it with Clockwork Angels, right? Reading along with or listening along
Kevin.
With the audiobook.
With Yeah, but that wasn't necessarily Neil's writings, but
no, it's Neil reading it,
which is very cool.
Yeah,
nice. Okay.
Well, and as we know, he and Kevin like co-authored that entire album and novel narrative series that came after that. So you can't say that he didn't write that. It may have been Kevin putting the words, you know, finally on the page, but they co-engineered that whole thing. That was a great revelation.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Neil's lyrical story that spawned the book.
So, and he's got a new book coming out, right? He's got the new book about his cars.
The cars, I can't wait. I thought it was out already, but apparently that got delayed. Was in the Rush news this past week, right?
Yeah. Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. Right. I think it's on Rush's blog. We'll get there.
Yeah,
I think
September,
you're going to have to go
think.
Look at that. I think you're right. Len's right on top of it. We don't need to go to Rush's blog tonight. Rush's a band blog.com tonight. But yeah, so my God. So yeah, I love how you're talking about the magic and the mystery of being at the show, the first show, and every song is a reveal. You have no idea what's to come because it's going to be on the internet as soon as you're walking out of the show. And then from then on, it really was that world. So you really couldn't get away from, or you couldn't get recapture that kind of moment because the internet and, or because internets, right? Period.
And that's the way it is with every show now. Every concert right? I go to, it's like, oh, someone, you can always go and look it up. Look up the
no
set
surprises.
List. You'll know exactly
no
what's going to be played. Yeah, it's hard to get, you know, that kind of surprise and wonder anymore, but it is what it is.
Exactly.
Well, you gotta resist temptation. don't Google that.
Nice callback.
Concert.
So Len, tell us with you know, you've written this book, you've been in the community for a long time. Tell us about maybe a standout moment that you've had with someone who's picked up your book. That's got to be some kind of magic, huh? A simple kind of magic.
Besides the negative reviews that I got on Amazon.
Oh, fuck the negative reviews. Oh, these are people they don't understand.
Yeah, that's, jealousy. I stopped reading them actually, because again, I'm like, I told you it was like $3, and I was able to
right. You didn't do
price.
It for that. You didn't. You weren't doing it for anybody else.
But when this one, when they gave me all this extra stuff,
yeah,
they said, okay, well now it's going to be like $10.95 or something. And I'm like, what? Why? Why is it more expensive? I'm like, I don't think it's worth $10.95. I'm like, I think it's worth $3. So when people would say something mean, I wanted to reply, but I'm like, it's just stop, just stop. I want to say, hey, I didn't make the price. I'm sorry you didn't like it, but now, like, I haven't run into anybody that's read it. But like I mentioned in the beginning, it's really cool now when you run into someone that you would never expect. Is a Rush fan, and I wear it on my sleeve, right? Yep. So it's my ringtone or a shirt. you'll see somebody and they'll say, hey man, nice shirt, I'm a Rush fan too. And then it's like instantly you can start talking. Yeah, just like we're doing now. Hey, where'd you see
holy
you?
Shit. Like, well, it's 2024. Like what is your like fucking ringtone?
Instant,
what's the ringtone?
Connection? It's Tom Sawyer.
Tom Sawyer!
but tomorrow, Sawyer. Tomorrow when I'm speaking at this conference and they wanted an intro song. So they're like, we want, what song do you want to play when you're walking on the stage? I'm like, oh, okay, crap. So I'm like, Subdivisions. If someone forced me,
yes.
my, you know, your favorite song changes probably every week, right? But for me, that's always one of the ones where I'm like, I can never get off of that song. It's always going to be one of the favorites, no matter what the other ones are. So I'm like, yeah, that'll be a good one. Yeah. Let me put that in there. So, and I'm like, what should I do? Should I ask everybody in the audience who knows what the song is and just see how many people actually know what it is?
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't do a poll. Yes. All right.
Yeah,
I'm going to get a report. Sawyer. I'm going to have somebody in the audience, so I'm going to get a report. That's awesome.
Bill Levine will tell
you. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. That's great. So check this out. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I was at a diner a couple of weeks ago. And me and my wife are sitting there, and I have my Danforth and Pape shirt on underneath another sweatshirt. And
Lakeside
guy,
Park.
Yeah.
That's,
and there's
that's
a
the
guy
shirt, right?
At a table next to me, and he's wearing some kind of Rush something. I can't remember what it was. And I said, oh, you're a Rush fan, huh? He's like, yeah. And so I lifted up my sweatshirt and showed him the Lakeside Park. And then we're talking about... one of the episodes, and I said, you got to check this out and listen to it. And all of a sudden, the waitress, unassuming woman, kind of, you know, a little frumpy, and she's like, oh, yeah, I love Rush.
It's
no
crazy
shit.
How many people have just seemed to dig it now, you know? And it's like the Rolling Stone article, you know, remember when I like, at the end, they seem to be really, and I know it was a lot of younger bands that were kind of coming out and saying how important they were to influence them, but it's like,
well,
man, I didn't know any Rush fans back when I was like my buddy and maybe two or three other people, and I'm like, now it's like so many people seem to be getting into it and digging it, and I'm like, it's too late now, guys, you missed the boat.
Yeah, it's over. Yeah. Long time, long gone. And then shit, even for you and I, so like we were saying, right, so we met each other so long ago, we're hanging out in mixed company, having beers, whatever, you know, we were in mixed company. Rush did not come up. His love of Rush didn't come up with all the ladies around and everything else we was doing. We just didn't get to talking. So I had no idea, right? So yeah. So this is what's so great now is that, you know, the community is still here. As much as we're saying that, yeah, the band, it's heyday and everything. I mean, the band itself is no more. The community lives on, the beating heart of it. And like you said, yeah. I mean, you know, shit, you talk about the idea of having, you know, drummers from cover bands go play with Rush. Our friend Fedge Herb just did a cover of Witch Hunt, produced by Terry Brown, and the cover art being done by Hugh Syme. I mean, holy fucking shit. So the guys in Solar Federation, really, not to mention all the stuff Steve Brown Moving Pictures is doing, right? So many of these bands out there. Why not?
That's it. You owe me a beer.
Holy shit. Hey, you owe me something for that. That was like Why Not in stereo. Are we getting paid by them? Hold on. Did we get a new sponsor? I didn't know. Hold on. What? Anyway, so anyway, it's great. Like, the community, it's still here. It's still alive. We are the beating heart. So even getting together and bullshitting like we are, we're keeping it alive. And everybody who's listening in and joining in, we're just sharing our love of the band and, you know, talking about our friggin' rash. Your rash, my friend. Holy shit. Woo. You are a case 2112, Len. It has been so great getting to know about you, everything you've been doing, and your love of the band. And my God, thank you so much for sharing everything you did. Yeah, giving us the scoop. You have an open door around here. You come back anytime. We could converse all night because we got to move on. We got to get into the rest of the show. We got a format, and we got some stuff to take you through here. We want to pick your brain a little bit more, particularly on all things Rush. So we're going to get into something now that we call Chain Lightning, which is a little game that we play. It's kind of goofy. Don't know if you ever listened to it, but essentially we're going to ask you a series of questions. Four questions, rapid fire. Your first answer is your only answer because it's your best answer. It's the only one we want. What comes to the top of your head when we ask the following goofy question about our favorite goofy band? So, you ready to play?
Bring it.
I saw that big sigh. I'm like, oh, wait. He's like, ah, shit, I wasn't in for this. All right.
Is there a time limit?
Well, we got the song going on here. So how long is this song? Let's see. You got 4 minutes, 33 seconds to get through four questions. Let's see if we can do it. All right. Imagine Rush is the soundtrack to a hectic, comedic Rush Hour traffic scene in a movie, okay? In any movie. What song is playing as you navigate through the madness, dodging cars, fighting off that fucking itch you got there?
I think I'm going bald.
I wonder why. You guys got nice haircuts. I was going to compliment you both on your stylist there. Hey, Shats, I think you need to do the grotee, though. You got to get the grotee in.
Maybe that little Getty thing, but...
yeah. All right. Well, that was good. All right. All right, so after spending so much time in the lyrical depths of Rush like you have with your book, right? If you had to rewrite the spirit of radio to reflect your current itchy predicament, what would the chorus be?
Oh, if I had to rewrite the spirit of radio.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's a tough one. You're killing me.
Well, you're the lyrical guy.
Yeah, but...
You're the guy with the lyrical vision.
I can't rewrite those. Those lyrics are perfect.
We acknowledge this.
I'm going to have to go with that.
This is, oh, wow. You're going to have to. Yeah, he's doubling down on the original. It's like, fuck you guys.
Yeah, no, I can't. I can't come up with anything like that. That's a tough one.
All right. Well, okay.
Rewriting that.
Going deep. All right.
It would take me hours to rewrite that.
But now you're going to leave here, and that's going to be a part of your itch. It's going to start bothering you. It's going to start scratching at you inside.
Yeah, I'll email you.
In your head. Yeah, and that's you're going to have to come back, and you're going to have to share it with us, all right? So here we go. So if you had a face-off against Tom Sawyer, your favorite, in a modern-day battle of wits, using only Rush lyrics as your weapons, what song's lyrics would you choose to defend yourself from Tom Sawyer? Today's Tom Sawyer. And I should say today's, well, like in 2024, not in 1983's.
Well, the song that's coming to my mind is the last song on Presto. I'm singing it in my head, but this is in the background. It's throwing me off. But what's the last song on Presto?
Oh, shit.
I'm going to look at my book here, since I have it here.
Hey, that's it. And that book, what is that? That's A Simple Kind Mirror.
The Available Light. Of Rush. Available Light. The Available Light lyrics always got me. Well, I think that's one of the best he's ever did.
Okay.
That's what I would
Available
play.
Light. I love it. Wow. That's great. That
one
was really
favorites.
Good.
This Presto album is, like I said, the first one. It's one of my favorites because I was there. It was like the first one I really waited for, and there's a lot of good songs on there. Available Light is one of his best, I think. One of his best lyrics, certainly.
Yeah.
A lot, of light in that. A lot of light and dark. And
how many songs, right, are there like that where it's just so uplifting? Like, you know, like we were talking about before, where you had the same thought I did about Reflections on the Garden, right? And there's so many songs where when you really take it and personalize it, right, and get into it and apply it to yourself, you go, holy shit. Like,
yeah, that's one of the best things about it, is just how it applies to you at a human level. Like, you know, everybody goes through crap, and so many, you know, all of us have to look, you know, up from the gutter and look at the stars. Another song on Presto, right? The Pass. It's just so many good songs on this album.
Exactly, right? I mean, we were going through that the other day. We were actually surprised because, going way back, Shats and I were both not really, we weren't waiting in line and watching them cut open the box to get out. Yeah, we just weren't there at this time.
I don't think it's looked at as one of their better ones. I've heard other people talk about that it's not strong, but, you know, it depends on your moment in time when you approach it and what was happening in your life. That's what makes it, you know, different.
That's it. Where did the bond happen?
Wherever you start.
You got fused somehow, some way. That was it. And it doesn't really matter at the end of the day, right? Because even then, with that, right, still, you're going to go to your gateway with Tom Sawyer, and you got a relationship that goes on and on. There's so many songs that you were touched by. You wrote a friggin' book about it, all right?
So there's no bad albums, right?
Right? You know? Well, you know, there's. I what I like to say is that there are my least favorites, the least best, the least greatest albums. I mean, you know, it's like all shades of great.
Yep.
And I like Taishan. I'm sorry. Did I say that? Oh. Ooh. Oh. Ouch. All right. So, in honor of you, sir, being in our Authors Club here in our inaugural, what do we call this? So, the Walk in the Authors Garden month there, Shats? We've got Kevin Anderson now. We got Len Roberto. So, Len, Neil Peart starts a book club. And now this is great because you've told us now that you've read all his books going way back to Masked Rider, right? So you're in Neil's book club now, okay? What non-musical book do you think he will choose first for your club and why?
Non-musical book.
Yeah, think about everything you've ever read by him. What's he going to throw out for his book club to make an impression?
What's that book about the Zen Guide to Motorcycle Maintenance? What's that one? That's what it's called, sort of, right?
Okay.
The Zen Guide to Motorcycle Maintenance, yeah.
It's not like Dummies Guide to Motorcycle 101 or something?
Because I ride motorcycles, too, and I was always thinking, when they were in Connecticut or in the area, I'm like, I'm going out riding. I'm going to fucking find him.
You're going to find him? Oh, shit.
And I'm like, there's no good roads around here. He'd be stupid to ride around here. He likes riding in the dirt and all the crazy parts. I'm like, but I'm going to do it anyway. I'm like, wouldn't that be cool if I could run into him when we're out riding? Just a wave. Hey,
no,
that was...
Well, okay. Crash. Yeah, just a wave. We don't want to end up reading about you, about how they had to have security go talk to you.
But
no,
it never happens,
Neil's not into that, right?
Yeah. Well, if I ever saw him, I would just say... Hi, that's probably all I would do. I know he wouldn't want to be approached.
As we fainted. Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, Len, you made it through Chain Lightning. That was fast. You did
good
pretty
song.
Well.
Congratulations.
Sometimes we gotta play this song 2, 3, 4 times with people around here. So that was great. You did wonderful. And I really threw some curveballs at you there.
Pick a longer song.
Well, you know, the nature of what you do there with all the lyrics. So I'm really, you know, I really love the idea that you shared it, just shared where you're at with it, because you're just like us on this show here, right? We're not political. We're not correct. And we're the ones with the microphones, and we just want to say whatever the fuck we're going to say. And it could be right. It could be wrong. You know, there's a thing called the internet. You can go fact check us if you want. And then, you know, we encourage you not to. And that would be great. But no, we got good sources for information around here. You know, we use Rush as a band blog. Shats, did we find anything else out there over the last, since we've been gone for 2 weeks, other than the freaking ad that came up on my screen about losing 37 pounds using chair yoga the hard way? Holy shit.
Oh my God.
Ooh, wow. Yeah, I'm gonna need some of that soap afterwards too. Oh my God. Yeah. So what do we got? So there was news out there.
Let's see.
Anything good?
You know, there was something that
talked about Peggy. What a story. What a great personal story, Len. Thank you so much for sharing that. That was wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Silver Surfer's book. Late till September. We got that. Mm-hmm. Let's see. There was news out there about Kevin Anderson being on the Rush Rash. That was out there too. At some point.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, I think we got everything else.
Yeah, not much in the way of Rush news. We're making the Rush news now, Chaz.
Well, this is it. So, all right, we've gotten through now. Let's go on to what we do around here, Shats. Why are we here?
Because we're here.
That's it. We're rolling bones. So, Len, this is what we was having a little pre-show difficulties, everybody. Thank you for standing by with our technological, shrinkological problems. But we was having a problem loading the wheel. So, we've got a guy here
and
with us
tonight. We're nothing without the wheel.
We are nothing without the wheel. Well, the wheel is where the presence is often revealed. Shats, holy shit. So we had Kevin Anderson out here. We're frequently talking about how Neil is just a presence around this place. There's just always the coincidentals are too fucking coincidental around here to be anything else other than the merry prankster from another time, another place, stopping by to visit us.
How did we not pick up on that night?
So we go and spin, turn the page with Kevin Anderson being here, Neil's lifelong friend. We spin, turn the page, and we don't associate that with getting a message from the great beyond. What the fuck? You're asleep at the switch, Shets.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I was so starstruck that what song came up didn't really matter.
That was the song that came up with.
Turn the page.
That was the song.
It was. This is not fixed. This wheel is not fixed. Other than the presence, there's some kind of influence that comes in when we spin the fucking wheel. We take a couple shots here.
That's poetic.
We spin the wheel. Well, it's really. I can't tell you. You got to look at the titles of the shows, the songs we've covered. There's always a connection to what's going on. It's fucking bizarre, and we do not script that. That is not rigged in any way. So it sends a chill up my spine every time. So we are here to roll the bones, spin this wheel, and to that, we ask the question, sir, what you itch? What are you itching to hear tonight? They got 141 songs left on this wheel, so if you say one we've already listened to, we'll tell you. But at this point, there's about 141 left. They're all studio tracks written by Rush. We only had 165 to start. We did not include any covers here. None of the live stuff. No redundancy. Just all the original cuts. We've taken a few off the wheel. The Garden won't be here tonight. That is a special show. So we are, like I said, in total agreement with you on how special that song is. But so is La Villa Strangiato. Not on the wheel. What else is not on the wheel? Tom Sawyer? Not on the wheel. What else, Shats?
Xanadu is not on the wheel.
Xanadu, not on the wheel. And that's it. Yep. So other than that, wide open. What are you itching to hear?
Oh, I get to pick?
You get to pick.
Yeah, you get to.
We get to see, because then
manifest
if you win,
the wheel.
You call your shot. That's just a very cool thing. Bragging rights.
Well, let's stick with Available Light from Presto.
He's there. He's in. All right. All right. Cool. Okay. All right. We got that. Very good. We have not listened to that yet, Shats. Where are you at?
I think I want to hear Working Them Angels.
Mm. Working Them Angels.
Right, Snakes and Arrows.
Wow, yeah.
I love that song.
Yeah.
Oh, but you know what? I'm not supposed to say that because if it comes up.
You just blew it. That's part of the mystery. We got to listen and you got to tell us at the end whether it was living in
the
limelight.
Why am I choosing this song if I don't already love this song?
Fuck, all right, whatever. All right. So you know what?
I want to hear a song I don't really like.
All right. Well, here you go. I want to hear Fountain of Lament. Just because. I want to go back deep into the 70s and just see Len's face the whole time like, oh, really?
No.
Did you eventually come around to the 70s?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right.
I like a lot of progressive rock and progressive metal.
Clearly. Who was this freaking band?
Yeah, like Fate's Warning, they'll tell you, oh my God, Fountain of Lament and that stuff was one of their favorites that spawned their first three
influential
albums.
Right? People don't realize how influential this shit was. Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
so we frequently had the conversation like, is Rush a metal band? Where do you stand? Was Rush a metal band?
No, I think that they were an amalgamation of a whole bunch of things, but okay. They were heavy, absolutely heavy, but I would have called them the first progressive metal band. I would have called them progressive.
There you go.
Progressive metal.
Progressive yep. metal. Which
band. Is still okay. my favorite genre, so, you know.
There yeah. you go. All right.
They absorbed what was going on around them and made it their own. But, yeah, the 70s.
Hell yes.
Just power.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Jimmy Page taken to the next level. All of those guys taken to the next level. I believe Lifeson was the falcon that heard the falconers. He just went off and took it and did so many more wonderful, incredible, exotic things with it than all of his heroes. Because I love all of his heroes, too. I mean, I'm right there with him. I love all those same guys. I love playing that shit all night. But I'll tell you what, nothing is as rich and as lush, and you don't feel anywhere near the satisfaction of pulling it off like you do pulling off a fucking Alex Lifeson song, man. When you're playing a guitar, holy shit. When you pull it off and you can hear all those fucking notes and it's just like ringing through, you're like, ah.
I've seen some videos of some black and white videos of them playing 2112 in 1976. And you're
right?
Like, holy crap. He was, right? I mean, they were all good, but he was just
fucking notes.
Yeah, that was one of the things I remember when I was a kid. How can these three guys make all of this? Yeah. He was a hell of a guitarist.
I mean, oh, all of them. It was like what you were saying before, watching them on stage and them smiling and playing. They're all every fucking day. They're soloing. It's just like every song, it's just the three of them soloing. They happen to do it in perfect unison and synchronization, so we don't get it. That's really what they're doing. They're just so brilliant that way. Yeah, what a fanboy I am. I sit here, I gush. But, you know, I mean, it's amazing, like you said, watching the videos, right? Because you go back to some of the movies and you watch where it's got really high def and you got really close-up images, man. Wow. Holy shit. I mean, Al, just the way he just, like, it's amazing. I could watch that guy play the guitar all fucking day. And I'm not like that with every guitarist. And I'm a huge Eddie Van Halen fucking nut. We get out of here. I'm going over to the Van Halen podcast. But I tell you what. Nothing gives me more joy than watching Al play versus Eddie. And I don't know, maybe I'm just a little burnt out on Eddie, you know, because I play a lot of Van Halen in my cover band, but we don't play a lot of Rush. But there's just the thing. Al is just so good as a guitarist at filling the spaces with what needs to be there, not stuff to make him look good. You know what I mean? Not stuff to show off.
Mm-hmm. Which something is the enhance problem the song. With a lot of progressive music now. It's just wanking on the guitar. And it's
thank
like,
you.
You're not serving the song. You're just playing, you know, I don't want to
it's self
audience, but you're, yeah,
it's self-indulgence.
Yeah.
It's just you're just stitching parts together to see how many notes you can play as fast as you can play.
And it's all fucking sweep picking and all this shit. It's like, so what? You can play a fucking scale. There's no emotion or feeling in it. And I mean, shit, like playing a song, like, so my band just started playing fucking Red Barchetta and trying to, you know, playing that song the way Al plays it on the guitar. My God, it's an athletic event. You have to roll all the way through it. And there are definitely distinct parts.
And
he's not doing anything twice. Yeah, it's really great, man. It's so much fun. Xanadu, I mean, like, the list goes on and on and on. Like, you know, truly great guitar-driven songs. And he is the fucking Rodney Dangerfield, a fucking great guitarist, man. He just don't get no respect at all. He doesn't. Yeah. And I think someday he will, you know, and amongst us, he certainly does. But out in the rest of the world, I mean, shit, Nafla just has him on a fucking compilation record, and they doesn't even put him on a cover. With all these other guys, Al doesn't show up. So, hey, come on, whatever, you know. Yeah. Is what it is. They are the greatest. But anyway, so we've all manifested shots. How many shots are we doing tonight? So we raise a couple of shots here in honor of the professor, the McAllen. What are you busting out with this evening, sir? Vintage and number of shots, please.
Well, let's stick with the 12 tonight.
All right.
And I'm good for 3 shots.
So I don't drink anymore, Len, which is what we used to get together and do maybe a couple times. So you guys get to split my shots between you here. We're going to use those to shuffle our wheel and go ahead and hoist if you got them. And we're doing, there we go. So we have shuffled our wheel. We are clicking to spin, and round she goes with the sound effects tonight. You never know when they're going to show up. What did we get? Brand Designs.
Nice.
Brand Designs.
Okay. Off of Power Windows. 1985. Now you're going to see Shats in action, because this is when I ask the question, or when I say, just the facts, Shats. Grand Design. Did I remove it from the wheel? I didn't remove it. Hold on. Let's
wait. We don't want it to come up again.
Let's you know, yes. Let's delete.
Can't have that happening. Okay, October of 1985, the 11th studio recording, Power Windows. We've played some stuff off of Power Windows already.
We have, yes.
Yeah. Motion Detector and.
And who produced this record? Oh, I'm having a draw. I'm drawing a blank. Who produced Power Windows?
This was Peter Collins.
Okay.
Peter Collins. This was post Terry Brown.
Right.
The height of the keyboard era, I would say, right? Well, maybe Hoagie.
Well, maybe there. Where it was kind of kicking off, right? Or where they were really getting hot and heavy with it, right? So Grace Under Pressure, I'd say kind of started hot and heavy.
Yeah, Power Windows was just kind of escalating. I think
but all little... in. Totally all in. No shit. Yeah, I mean, you know, considered a keyboard album, no doubt. Yeah.
Recorded in at the Manor in England.
Okay.
Also, Air Studios in Montserrat. I was just in Montserrat. Wow, what a beautiful place to be to record music. I had no idea there was a recording studio over there. And go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say another one of those albums that I place it into time. Not that it was 1985, but my senior year in college. I had a cassette, and I don't know, I had a cassette of Power Windows, and it just sounded, I put it in this old stereo, but I had these big speakers, but it sounded so clear and so clean, and I used to play this album all the time when I'd get out of class. There's great songs on this album. Marathon is a fantastic song. I mean, this is, my favorite era, if you pinned me down, would be the 80s. If I had to pick an era, it would be the 80s era. I know a lot of people say, oh, that's you know, that's the keyboard era and no guitar. I'm like, yeah, but the songs were just so powerful. There's so many good songs in there. But
the lyrics,
it was so prolific. I mean, they produced an album almost every year. It's like, yeah, give me the 80s.
They did. Yeah. Like, everyone, there were standouts, even if you weren't totally into it. Because, I mean, that's where I was. So, like, in the 80s, I pretty much, you know, ventured off after... I want to say after Signals, pretty much. So stayed in touch, but lightly. Emotion Detector was one I tried to use for lascivious purposes, put it that way. So, you know.
Big Money was a tour opener for a few tours there after.
Exactly. There were some big songs in there, right? And certainly, you know, Grace Under Pressure. I mean, there was some great, you know, endearing MTV moments that were kind of fucking born through a couple of those tunes, right? And certainly, you know. Where it went there, I you know, we've actually gone back now, and it's like you said, it was when I kind of came back to the band and I started appreciating it more, not for the metal or for the prog metal or for the heaviness, but for the lyrical content, right? And so, like, while I had always been aware of it, there was a period when I came back and was really profoundly touched by so many of the different, you know, lyrics as I kind of revisited the whole catalog and like spent time with each song and shit. I was nuts for a little while there. And like immersed, you know, just because like, hey, it would have been a long time and why not, right? And then like, wow.
This is what I do now. I have an old car that has a CD player. So I have all the CDs and I'm like.
There you go.
I go to the Rush pile and I'm like, I'm just going to grab one out that I haven't listened to in a while.
Thank you.
I'm going to throw it in the car and I'm going to listen to it all the way through. Except for the first album. I can't do it. But all the other ones, I'm just like, let me just grab one and my finger goes on one and take it out and listen to it all the way through. And you rediscover a song that you might not have liked all that much or whatever, and it's like, I forgot how much I like this album, and it's, you experience the album again and put it away and go on to another one next time.
That's true. It was pretty cool. It's like, I finally came to certain songs when I was fucking ready to come to them, you know, when I had fucking matured enough as a person to finally get maybe what, you know, the message. Whereas before, you know, just like it wasn't the right time or whatever, because I had touched base with every record that came out. It was like one of those things, one of your favorite bands or one of those greats. You always have to see what they're doing when they put out a new record. So I did all through that period, but I didn't buy them. You know, well, I bought a couple. I had Roll the Bones. I had Counterparts. Yeah, I started picking it up after the 80s, really. I kind of came back to them when they started getting a little heavier again, when they started getting away from the keyboards. I got to be honest. Yeah, when they put the keyboards a little bit further in the back. I like the keyboards. I'm not a total keyboard detractor. No, I think there was a lot of great stuff in that period, especially in that medium and making the music they were making at that time. But, and they were, you know, were what it is. They were world class at what they were doing. You know, you can't really touch that shit. You put it up against other bands that were out there, Genesis, The Police, you know, go against some of the big bands of that era that they were basically competing with, U2, right? Think about all these other bands. Rush was kind of stand apart on their own, but just as big.
So you came back. You came back when the grunge, when they were making their way through the grunge era, right? The early 90s.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think Counterparts was kind of an FU to the grunge, but they were taking a little bit of it and saying, "All right, we got to get a little more aggressive again." And that's the era you dug that one. You got back into it after that. Okay, that's cool.
I did. And a lot of people like Test for Echo. I really love Test for Echo. A lot of people not big fans of that. Vapor Trails. I'm another one where I like the big bombastic. You know, I like the big deep DW sound. I like, you know, where he went with his drumming, right? So post Freddie Gruber period and like how it all changed. I love the distinct eras, right? And I appreciate both of them for what they were. So
yeah, all of them.
So great. Well, we're gonna dive into a fucking great one right now. So a great era.
Yeah.
I didn't reveal my bias about the song. It's not what I was doing there, Shats. I just meant great.
No, not at all.
So Grand Designs, according to our friends at RushVault.com, the overarching theme of this song, in our ocean of commercialism, individuality stubbornly persists. This is the theme of Grand Design. Would you agree there, Mr. Lyrics?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. All right. So he's there. All right. So cool. All right. So we're going to go to that right now.
Against the run of the mill.
There we go. You're already quoting it, man.
Swimming against the stream.
There we are.
That's Rush in a nutshell, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. You know, they talk about the spirit of band, right? What endears them to so many is the... what the hell was that? That sounded like Night Ranger.
Other bands, Grand
Design. But, you know, what endeared Rush to so many, right, was the idea that, hey, they were thumbing their nose at everybody. They did what they wanted to do. And they did that every fucking album. It wasn't just, everyone loves to say, oh, it was 2112. They said, fuck you to everybody, just do what they want to do. It was every record they were doing that. They were never afraid to change their sound, to lose a few fans, to gain some new ones.
Yeah, that's where I get bent out of shape sometimes when people say, oh, you know, I don't like them after that. They're no good after Hemispheres. And I'm like, do you want AC/DC? Do you want to make the same freaking album every single time?
No.
If that's what you want, you got to. They're going to grow and change. You don't have to like it all, but appreciate it all, because who wants to do the same thing? Who wants to listen to the same album over and over again?
Right, exactly, right?
Same,
man.
Same sounds, the same
chorus. They never wanted to, if they had a hit album, they never said, okay, let's make that again. What made that good? Let's redo that. They were always looking to just move on. Okay, we did
take
that.
What's around them now, that they liked, absorb it, and then make it their own, and still keep their essence. But I don't. You guys like Dream Theater? You Dream Theater fans?
Oh hell yeah, sure.
So if you read their biography or the someone wrote a biography of them, they were saying like one of the albums, they specifically wrote the album to sound like Megadeth, and I was like, what? What? Who make an album to sound like another band? They set out from the beginning to sound like another band, and I'm like, why would you do that?
Well, especially a group so talented, that's kind of bizarre.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like I don't. That's totally the opposite of what.
So much more talented than fucking Megadeth. I'm sorry. I mean, I love Dave Mustaine. He's brilliant, but Dream Theater as a band, as a unit, holy shit! Are you kidding me?
Yep. And Portnoy's back. That's one of the bands I was telling you about earlier. I saw them, I think, 2 years ago, and the band sounds good, but he cannot sing. I know he injured his voice, so his voice has changed, but he sings in a totally different register now. So you hear the songs, and it doesn't sound right. It sounds like another, and it's like, it. I didn't like it. I'm like, what? Ooh, I don't want to see that happen to anybody else, but I still go see them. They're great musicians, and... But
that's painful, right? Yeah.
It's like
that's painful.
That doesn't
sound
like the songs that I remember. Not even close.
Right? Yeah. And it's tough.
I was afraid that would happen to Getty. Right? If Getty was out there singing, it would be so different now that it would that's what I meant by a little bit of the tarnishing. So
sure. Well, it's going to change, yeah. right? It's going to change as it did, as it did. And he actually did it very gracefully over the years. He did it, you know, age appropriate, you know, for where he was at. Yep. You know, it's amazing. Like, you know, yeah, I mean, there's guys out there today. Holy shit. That, yeah, you're absolutely right. So, no, I think, you know, like we said, what I heard him do on record, you know, with his lost recordings and everything sounded great. You know, I think these guys, they stick to the studio, you know, if they want to do some things, you know, bring out some new material. I'm all for that. Right. But yeah, that live experience, no one expects them to have to try and pull that shit off live anymore. You know what I mean?
No. Yeah.
That's nuts. That's nuts. All right. 20, so,
it's almost 10 years ago now.
Almost, you know, they're goes by so fucking fast.
They're 70 years old now. And okay, the Stones are 80 and they're doing, but I mean, it's Rolling Stones music.
Well, it's Rolling Stones and it's the Rolling Stones at 80. I mean, you know, come on. Right. I mean, I'm all about it. I think it's great, but it's still the Rolling Stones at 80, right? So it's not the Rolling Stones in 1968. You know, right, exactly. So, all right, so let's get into Grand Designs off of Moving. No,
Power Windows.
Dang, Power Windows. Power Windows. God, I'm just totally out of it. Hold on, let's get to Grand Design off of Power Windows. Where have we heard that before? Did you hear those harmonics?
Yep.
I did.
Useless talk.
What is he holding up? He's holding up a bunch of concert tickets. Look at all these concert tickets. You get every one of the 14 shows you've been to?
Yeah, pretty much.
And here that's awesome.
The uncut one.
Excellent.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, like I wanted to show you, this was the original. That was the original book.
Oh, look at that.
Pretty ugly.
Yeah.
That's great. That's
nondescript,
$3
vanilla.
Well, that's like Kevin sent his first book off to Rush's management. The book inspired by Grace Under Pressure.
Grace Under Pressure.
He showed us that original cover versus the updated version with Hugh. Right? Did Hugh help him update that cover?
I think so.
Yeah, amazing, amazing stuff. But yeah, so from where things begin, right? So hey. How about the lyrics to this song and where we've been going so far? So, Shats, I see you over there. You were, like, getting ready to say something. So, let's get into these lyrics here. Right? So much style without substance.
What was I
going to say?
I think I was going to comment on the concert tickets.
Oh, is that what you were doing? Okay.
Yeah, I was looking at them.
So, you got every one, all 14, plus your uncut.
I saved them all from everything I've ever ever been to. I had a
you
box.
You got the
of
programs?
Them. No, I never. I was never a program guy.
Okay.
But what I did recently was I took all the concert tickets that I had from back to 1983, and I got a big wood frame, and I got some thick whatever, and I kind of lacquered them all with like a half inch thick, so they're on this big wooden board that I have in my man room. I didn't put the Rush ones on there, but I have all the ones that I've been to back in the day when you actually used to get printed tickets from Ticketron. I miss those days. Now you get nothing.
Right, and they rip them in half.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And some of them, you know, would be actually whole, and I kept them all in a box. And that was like
how many tickets you got on this thing of yours?
Oh God, there's got to be 40 or 50 that I was able to.
Jeez. So he lacquers 40 or 50 tickets to a board, but he won't put the Rush down on the lacquer.
Well,
like,
yeah,
no. They're too special.
Exactly.
That's right.
He keeps those in the jewelry box, right?
Yeah,
in the special safe.
I got passes. I got tickets.
Passes. You know,
passes. I got some. We went to some VIP shows for Fates
no,
One.
Oh shit!
Go. You know.
All right, Len.
Tickets,
did you ever?
Tickets.
Did you ever do the meet and greet?
Nah.
No.
I didn't want to pay extra money for that.
Okay. All right. Didn't want to be that much of a fanboy, huh?
Yeah,
we're gonna go so far.
Say? Hi, guys, I love your music.
I love
guys.
You. I really like your music. Yeah,
all look, I've got all three of you on my shirt.
All I would say would be like, thank you. You know, thank you so much. That's
right?
All I would really
yeah.
say.
Right. Yeah.
What else could I say?
Exactly. But, you know, how's your wine? You know, you just kind of. All right, let's dive back into the song. We are at a minute five into this 5 minute number here. Would have me this, X me that. These lyrics are just as you know relevant today.
Yeah, what I love mm-hmm. about it is in many of his songs, right? He puts the words together to you know, there's a rhythm to the words when you say them.
Yes.
They're meant to be like if you speak them, you know, like so much mind on the matter. He juxtaposes certain words that you know. Mind over matter, right? You hear that, but the way he says it, he kind of flips it around. Poison and power, you know. It's like he was a wordsmith. You know, he must have taken a lot of time to go through these and say, "How am I going to say this?" To, and then think about how it's going to sound when Getty sings it. But you know, just words on paper. You know, he reminds me of Tolkien. You know, J.R. Tolkien, which he was a fan of Lord of the Rings.
Sure, absolutely.
He knew that words had a connotation and power. Certain sounds. Certain consonants, you know, you would hard K sounds, hard, those are negative, you know, they're evil. Tolkien would say that, but he does it in the same way, mind and matter and poison and power. That kind of stuff is like,
yeah.
It kind of flows in a way that you're like, you can, it's a visual thing, but it's an auditory thing. It's just the sounds go together. You know, it's like,
well, and he's really articulating himself very well too. He's really getting his thought out there. There's so much poison in power. The principles get left out. That's the poison with the power these days, right? No principle.
And those are
so much
that
mind
run
on the
whole lot of songs, right? Those are
right,
songs
exactly.
You're yeah. radio, you know, where we lose that
integrity,
that passion. Yeah, and that's what their whole career was about.
Right, calling it out.
Do what we want, and if you like it, great. And if you don't like it, we're not going to change.
Too.
Yeah.
Right.
It was definitely spreading the message here. We got the contagion ourselves. We got an itch. We got to keep scratching. Here we go.
Thank you.
So just when I was about to ask, where is the guitar? I'm not really, and there it is. He comes out, but he's like, it was during this era where he would just step out for these few moments, provide a little solo, let you know he's there and get back to, wow, what's such a heavy, really cool, heavy keyboard song though, man. Just like bang, stuff is bouncing around my headphones. And I'll tell you what, I'm really appreciating listening to it now because this is a revisit for me. I haven't listened to this one in a while. Like, sit down, really listen to it. The bouncing around, you know, in the head. And I can't hear the guitar. It's in there, you know. So that criticism that, you know, it was all gone. No, he was there and he was doing things, but
he was there.
It was way far in the background.
He was just filling in the sound, and just complimenting the keyboards, not standing out on his own.
No. The keyboard until the so solo. Fucking strong.
Yeah, they were writing the songs on the keyboard, right? They were writing it.
The whole thing. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. But when he comes screaming in, he was really doing, he was just as progressive in that solo and as anything else that he did, even though this was very commercial. I mean, that was pretty fucking tripped out playing, man. You ever try and sit down and play some of this shit, you're just like, what the hell was he thinking? What was he feeling? What was he latching onto to be able to get that, right? I mean, like, oh, my God. It's just so – I'm sorry. That guy was fucking weird at times.
A lot of science in here too, right? That's another theme that I always hear in theme, you know, surface tension, kinetic dreams, you know, precious metals. Natural science song, you know, there's always a lot of technical stuff that he was fascinated with too, I think, that kind of seeps into some of these lyrics.
Right.
I agree. Yep.
I just have to warn you guys, my laptop's going to die in about 15 minutes.
All right. We are almost done. I think let's get through the rest of the song.
Yeah, let's finish up the song.
It's a race against time. Goes out with the sound of I don't know, that's got a Tom Sawyer feel
that
to it.
Reminds me of Cygnus, that ending.
I was gonna
there.
Say Cygnus, yeah, it's got some flavors. Yeah. I think they were doing that on purpose.
Little callback.
I definitely think that was on purpose. That's what I love about Rush when they would do shit like that, they would do a throwback or a callback. They wouldn't fucking try and like do Photograph 2024, right? I mean, that's like, you know, there's some integrity there. These guys were not recreating songs, right? They were just, hearkening back during a period where they sounded nothing like what they're hearkening back to. Let's just say that, right? Holy shit. So for me, you know what? Before we get into the analysis, we got to ask. So we've gotten through the song. And we know we're rushing against time here. Len's got a laptop issue going on here. We're facing a battery dying. So the song, Len, is it Living in the Limelight or do you wish them well? So Living in the Limelight is thumbs up. Wish them well. God. We never say anything bad, but we go
no,
down.
No, this is a great song. This album is I'm going to have to pull this out for my next CD in the old car.
There you go.
If it starts, I can listen to it. Yeah. I'm going to have to. Track this one. This was always one of my favorites. Like I said, my senior year in college,
it was
regularly, almost every after a class, I would come in, pop it on Marathon. I love Marathon. There's a
Okay.
section in Marathon where it you know, it reminds me of flying, which is something else I do, but that part in the middle there, there's a lot of really good songs on that.
Oh, that's right. You're a pilot. That was in your biography picture out there.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
That's right. Private pilot. All right. Yeah. Very cool.
Definitely good right. choice. I'm happy. I was like, oh my God, what if the song comes up and it's one that I don't really like? I'm like,
right? That's always a possibility. Like, shit happens.
There's none that I don't like, but this is one that I do like.
Well, like we said, good least job. one of the songs you favor least. Yeah. All right. So good. We got it going for you. So good.
Stuff.
So
good stuff.
Shats, where are you at? Are we living in the limelight? Are we wishing them well?
Can you see the thumbs?
Oh, they're up. They're up. Oh,
yeah, right. Yeah. This one's living.
There. You were looking hesitant.
No,
all right.
No. This one lives in the limelight. I okay. love the syncopation throughout the song. There's so much syncopated drumming that's happening. Offbeat hi-hat.
Digging that shit.
And yeah. And
there's a
and
lot of drums stuff, going on. A lot of keyboards.
All the stuff at the very end. With him yes. and Getty.
Yes.
Right in sync. I mean, they worked on that for sure.
Oh,
just
clearly.
Right in sync with every hit.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
Beautiful.
Yep. All right.
Yeah,
so
great song.
All right. Well, where am I going? I get to my camera here. And where am I going with this one? Oh, I got to go back to the thumbs up. The keyboards are so fucking outrageous. I mean, you know, if I was to go and date something into the 80s and give an example of great keyboards, I would throw this song right in anybody. Like, check this shit out. This is amazing stuff to define that period and what was really good about the period. You know, even being a guitar nut like I am and having it be, yeah, that he walks out for a bit of a solo and you really got to work to hear him the rest of the time. Can't deny how powerful the song comes across. I mean, just the production, it's huge. Like you said, there's so much going on. Like every other Rush song, they're all doing their thing. And when you really tune in, holy shit, it's a fucking like powerhouse performance. Like everything that was going on there, right? They're all standouts. It comes out. The only thing I think I would have that kind of had me waffling there was the oh, 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 oh part.
Yeah.
They could have cut that out, made this a little shorter because they get right to that last section there. And that's just fucking great. I just love it. Just makes me want to jump right out of my seat, like even higher, right? Like, you know, I went to see that band Ghost. And when they went into the twin harmony guitar solo shit that sounds like Lynyrd Skynyrd or something from the 70s with all this metal, I was freaking out when that shit was happening because I was like, that pulled that memory right out. And that's exactly what the end of this song did too, right? Totally pulls mm-hmm. it back to like, oh, that's what I love about a harken back. That's what I love about a nod, right? Because I can hang with you with your new shit, but let's not forget what made you so great, right? And that was cool. It's like they throw that in. Love it. So can't downvote a song like this. Can't.
No.
So, oh, shit. While I'm sitting here getting all fucked up, the goddamn monkey's here. So we play this game, Len. It's called... how many times did they play it live? Because now, oh no, wait, we're not going to do that first. The monkey's here. What did I do? I gave myself the cue on the monkey and I'm going into the other bit. So we're at the BPMs.
You're mashing up all your games here.
It's COVID brain, man. It's COVID brain. They tell you I had some anesthesia earlier today. It was a lot of fun. But anyway, so here we are. Right? I think I still got remnants going on from the anesthesia. So we got to rush. So we got the monkeys here. He's playing a fucking song. And you know, Shats, you play drums. How long have you been playing the drums? Long time,
40
right?
40
some years. Okay.
Something like that.
How fast was this song? What's the BPMs?
This is a fast song.
Yeah. How fast?
I'm going to put it at like 160.
No! Oh! Now, you've been playing 40 years. How long have you been playing Rush?
40 years.
Yeah, and did you ever play this song with your band?
No.
All right. We'll give you a little break then. It's only 142. Not quite as fast as you think.
Yeah,
that's an average. It's an average, right? Yeah, okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Just there. But all right, so now we do have a game that Len can play along with, as you hear. We got the Price is Right music coming
another
in.
Another game.
We're almost there, Len. Almost there. So how many times did they play this live? We're going to have you guess a number closest to the pin without going over wins. These are Price is Right rules.
You mean
so
how many ahead. Tours? How many tours?
No, how many times?
How many times did how many they play times? It on every on any tour?
So they could
how
play
this song.
How
many times in total?
290, 216, 113, 51, who knows?
I don't
What's your guess?
I don't think they played this song very much.
Oh.
I'm going to say 40.
Okay, 40.
I don't think they played this. I'm trying to remember if I ever heard it live. I don't
okay.
know if I ever heard it live.
Okay, you're saying 40 times, and he's thinking he didn't Total. See it. It would have come out in 85, so you started picking up tours. You would have 90. Seen it if they played it, probably, if they played it past, you know, touring for the record, of
certainly,
course.
Certainly they played it on
Power Windows. For fuck's sake!
Right, so if they played it for one tour or whatever. He's saying 40, though, because the game is closest to without going over. So come on, Shots, what do you got?
40. I say it's more like 150.
150? Oh, okay. Let's see. All right, so you say 150. He says 40. I'm going to say 141. And so what's the answer? Oh, you hear that fucking sound? I win again. 142
no
times by wow. the band Rush. Now, very interesting, wow. out of Setlist FM, 150 times by four artists. So you would have lost because you would have come in right on it. But there's another artist out there that played this, Cordy. But no, 142 times by Rush. They debuted it December 4th, 1985 at the Cumberland County Civic Center in Portland, Maine. We've heard about that show before because we've talked about this tour before. So when was the last time they played it? Now, they played it 142 times, so that's more than one tour. And it came out in 85. Think about the nature of how they went out in the later years and how many, when do you think the last time was?
Maybe Time Machine?
Oh,
2014.
Right. 2013, August 4th, 2013, at the Sprint Center in Kansas City, Missouri. So, Len, you saw this. You saw this.
2012, yeah.
Yep. Definitely saw it.
Yeah, but they may not have played it on Clockwork Angels tour. He may not have seen it.
Maybe not.
If you saw the Time Machine tour after that.
Time Machine, yeah. He's got the big tome. He could go through the volume. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, hey, Len. Jesus. Well, look at this. We got all the way through most of the treatment. You're there. You have friggin' done this. It's like the crowd is going nuts. Len, you have endured. You've been through the gauntlet. We are putting your computer your computer to the test. But before we let you go, we do have one last game we make you play. Oh yeah, look at him. He's breaking down. He's like, I'm never doing this again. I gotta get up at 5 a.m. So look. It's called, we got this thing, it's called Shats' Scratch List. It's where people go to see Rush live these days. All these great bands that we have in as guests, and we got so many friends, we can't even name them all. We might piss somebody off at this point. We're going to forget somebody. So we're going to say all of our friends in the Rush community, we want you to go see them live. It's Shats' Scratch List, where you can go every week to listen to where they're playing in your neck of the woods. But our little game here is making you say Shats' Scratch List 5 times fast.
Shats is scratch list, Shats is scratch list, Shats is scratch list, Shats is scratch list, Shats is scratch list.
He was so close. I don't know. Are we giving that to him?
That's a tough one.
He was affected. Yeah. I saw it. Did you see the way he locked his jaw? He had a technique going there. That was pretty good. We're going to give it to you. We'll call back on the whistle. No whistle. No Roy Kent.
Yeah, no, I think that was pretty good.
That was excellent. Very good. Very good. So, Shats, what do you got?
You
did
ready?
Mr. 10. You did the 10 last time, so let's see what
I
you got.
I did 10 last time. Okay, here we go. Schlitz, 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 schlitz.
Yeah, man. Whistle on the play. Whistle
isn't that a beer?
Play.
Schlitz.
Schitz list. Yeah. Schlitz is schitz list. Schlitz is schitz list. Schlitz is shit list. Schatch is scratch list. Schatch is scratch list. Schitz is schitz list. All right, here it is. Here's the scratch list.
No if and way. It's time for Schatz's scratch list. Say it. Say it 5 times fast. Shots is scratch list. 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 Fuck. Nice. You fucking nailed that shit, bro.
Stop. Collaborate and listen. We're on a mission. We know you got that itch. And we're serving up the cure. Somewhere close to you. Fucking right we are. You know this. These bands are your on the ground support. First responders to suit your Rush Rash. Go out and scratch your itch to hear Rush live with any of these great Rush bands. Or bands that play lots of Rush. In the UK moving pictures, Scotland, those haggis eating hoses are off to Brazil, bitches. 12 and 13 April, 2020, fucking 4 in Criciúma, Brazil at Rushfest Brazil. Leonie Jane Kennedy supporting Dan Petlansky in London, England on April 13. With moving pictures, Scotland on 19 April in Worcester. 20 April in Abingdon. 21 April in Cambridge, then supporting Kairos on tour in Brighton and Hove. And she just got back from the US. Hells yes. Rush Fest Scotland 11 May in Glasgow, United Kingdom, tightly holding in a hope of being sponsored by Tenements. In South America, Rush Fest Brazil 12 and 13 April in Criciúma, Brazil. In the US, why not April 6th at the Milton Theater in Milton, Delaware. April 12th at the Canyon Montclair in Montclair, California. And April 13th and 14th at Left of the Dial Records in Orange, California. Check out Billy Alexander's new single, Hammer of the Gods, streaming everywhere, yo. Second Contact Shass Band will be at Tommy Fox's Public House on May 4th. Come out and meet up with the Shass Man. Solar Federation is at River Street Jazz Cafe in Plains, Pennsylvania on May 11th. Yep. They were just voted best cover band in the region and are releasing a cover of Witch Hunt record produced by Terry Effin Brown, with cover art by Hugh Sod. No shit. Greg Wolfie Wolf from the Regarding Roger podcast. This band Accidental Breakdown April 13 at the YML BBQ in Georgetown, Connecticut. April 20, the old 420 at Milestone in Georgetown, Connecticut. Go Boneless Bitches. Boneless is the bestest. Dumb Love. Drummer Joe Cruz's Stone Temple Pilots cover band will be at Crystal Bees on June 15 with more dates through the fall. We'll talk that shit up then, baby doll. Vapor Trail Rush tribute at Darrow's House Club. Fucking Darrow Hall's House Man in Pauley, New York, Saturday, June 1st. Rush Archives at the Wild Blue Saloon in Parker, Colorado on April 20th. Hot damn. The Mood Lifters Saturday, June 22 at Navajo Live in San Diego, California. You know California knows how to party. Lotus Land, the Rush tribute will be at the Kappa Theater in Beverly Ham, Massachusetts on April 20th. Rush will be at Unrest in the Forest Mark 3 on Sunday, May 26th at a private residence in Auburn, California, but it's open to the public. Go to rushisaband.com for details. In Canada, New World Men will be at Cabaret BMO in Saint-Thérèse, Quebec, May 16 and 17. And at Up and Down Resto Bar in Tracadie-Sheila, New Brunswick on May 31. 2112 played in January and will hopefully have more gigs soon. And if they do, Macho Man, you get banged up about that shit here. Shazbot, nanu, nanu.
All right, so that's where you could go see everybody live now. Oh, shit, Corey Morissette has wormed his way in one more time to give us the pod roll. We're on the Deep Dive Podcast Network. Corey is here to give us the lowdown. Corey, who's on this network with us?
All right, we even got a couple of new ones on this week, so stay tuned for that. But you can also catch myself and Kevin Brown at the Ultimate Catalog Clash. Season 3 is all about the first 20 years of the Foo Fighters, so you don't want to miss that. Kevin Brown also does a show on Tom Petty called The Tom Petty Project, and a Queen show with his buddy Randy Woods called Seaside Pod Review. Then we have Scott Haskin at Uriah Heep, The Magician's Podcast, Nate and John at the Deep Purple Podcast, The Simple Man at Skinnerd Reconsidered, Terry T-Bone Matthew at T-Bone's Prime Cuts, Rye at Sabbath Bloody Podcast, Paul Joe and David at In the Lap of the Pods, Andy and Matt at Hawk Binge, Eric and Jonathan at Made in A to Z, Daniel and Josh at Diary of the Madman, The Ultimate Aussie Podcast, Ben and Sam at University Speaking, The Red Hot Chili Peppers Podcast, George and Hattie at the Judas Priest Cast, Clay and Rye at North by South Podcast, Craig and Jonathan at So Far, So Pod, So What, Quinn at End Volume for All, Sam, Nick, Steve, and Mark at the Rock Roulette Podcast, Chaz and Greg at Regarding Lulu, Chaz and Shats at Rush Rash, Chaz and Wolfie at Regarding Roger, and Chaz and Scott at Regarding Van Halen 3, coming this summer to a podcast player near you. Then we have the Rewind to 1984 podcast, the Sean Geek and Fast Fred podcast, the DLR cast, the Bogus Otis Show, Booked on Rock with the legendary Eric Senich, You're All Doomed, a Friday the 13th podcast, Spinning the Wheel podcast, Dissect That Film, Three's Company 2, a rewatch podcast, and our brand new patron, John Drake, has a couple of podcasts himself, including Talking Into Infinity. That's a podcast about the band Dream Theater, and the Nerf Herder Council. If you know the term Nerf Herder, you know what that show's about. And, of course, our good friends at Pot of Thunder, the recognized symbol of excellence in rock and roll podcasting. This week, they did a Gorky Park song. Holy fuck, was that awful, but the show is can't miss. Chris Jericho joined him on that one, so you don't want to miss that.
Woo! All right. The network is strong, Shats. We continue.
Oh, yeah.
The force is here. Very good. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Len.
It carries on.
It does.
Len, thanks, man.
We think we're trying to drain every last drop of energy out of your laptop. Thank you so much.
This is awesome. Had a great
for
time
being here. We had a blast with you, and we got a feeling that we didn't even scratch the surface of your real friggin' Rush story. We just got highlights here and there. So you're gonna have to please come back. We'll extend the open invitation. All right, great.
When you do the garden, bring me back when you're talking about the garden.
Oh, we'll definitely. All right, there you go. Yeah, put him down on the list. All right, he's there.
All right.
All right, so, Shats, we got another
episode.
That's it. That's it. We got another panelist. All right. Well, hey, this has been great, but we are at that point, Shats. We're telling everybody what? They got to go scratch, right?
Go scratch that itch. I'm going. I will have seen at the airing of this last Thursday. We'll have seen Why Not.
No shit.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Ah, all right. We'll tell the guys we said hello. You're going to run into Tim and Billy out there. Probably see everybody else.
I hope so.
Shit.
Yeah.
All right. That's very cool. Well, hey, all right. We're going to hear all about it when we come back. Till then, man. You got to go scratch.
Go scratch.
Thank you, guys. It was great. Thank you.
See you, Len. Good meeting you.
Yeah,
thanks
a lot,
brother.
Rush.
Talk to you later.
Thank you very much.